Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We're continuing our look at some of the Catholic schools in the Archdiocese of Baltimore, and we are privileged to have with us today Lauren Hayden from St. Joan of Arc Catholic School in Harford County. Lauren, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Sean.
So, as I mentioned, St. Joan is in Harford County. Give us a sense for exactly where it is and the gender of the school and things like that.
Sure. St. Joan of Arc School is a small Catholic co-ed school located in Aberdeen, Maryland, which is in Harford County. We host one class per grade level, K-4 through 8th grade. We are a smaller alternative to some of the other Catholic schools because our class ratio is about 1 to 11. The Catholic St. Joan of Arc School was first opened in 1954 in a response to the growing needs of the Aberdeen community due to the increased work at APG, Aberdeen Proving Ground. So we just celebrated our 60th anniversary this past year, and it was a huge and wonderful celebration with a big party. St. Joan of Arc offers a wide variety of course studies, including reading, language, arts, science, social studies, music, math. But what makes St. Joan of Arc School so unique is our STEM program. In 2011, the Archdiocese named St. Joan of Arc a STEM school. And what that means is the areas of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics are a part of every area of course study. Our STEM program offers a collaborative, project-based learning. Our students aren't just sitting in the classrooms hearing information and facts, but they are applying what they've learned, and application, of course, is key to meaningful learning. Technology is fully integrated into the curriculum through daily use of smart boards in every classroom, mobile laptop carts, two mobile lab iPad carts, a school-wide internet access, and computers in every classroom. Just this summer, we renovated our computer lab, and St. Joan of Arc School now has a state-of-the-art computer and engineering lab with a 3D printer.
So you mentioned that the school is located in proximity to Aberdeen Proving Ground, and with the base realignment there, I have to think that many of your students have a relationship with Aberdeen Proving Ground, and that would certainly explain the school's emphasis on STEM.
Yes, yes.
And you also mentioned that it's one of just a couple of Catholic schools in the Harford County area. Do most of the students who attend St. Joan's live in Harford County?
All of our students and families who we serve live in Harford County area. We are relatively close to Aberdeen Proving Ground, like you said. So we do host a high number of military families. And we, of course, love our military families. We welcome transfers all year round to help accommodate some of the new moving families into the area, as military families move throughout the area.
Sure. So the school probably is uniquely positioned to serve families in the middle of a school year. I know a lot of families are reluctant to try and wait until after the school year to move their, you know, their families so that their kids don't have to start in the middle of a school year. But St. Joan, that's probably not unusual.
It is not unusual, and we're pretty used to it. So we do welcome our families throughout the year. And our teachers and staff are more than able to accommodate new students and get them up and running into the curriculum.
One of the things I love about the school is it's located literally in the middle of a neighborhood.
Yes.
You know, tree-lined streets, very traditional feel. How does the school and how do the students interact with that community there?
We are located in a very beautiful little community with some of old Victorian houses. I mean, it's absolutely gorgeous. We welcome our community to participate in any and all of our events. We are actually preparing for our annual Freedom Walk on 9/11, which, of course, we honor the men and women of service and remember 9/11. We pair with the town of Aberdeen to host this event. So, of course, our mayor will be in attendance. This year, our chorus will be singing at the Aberdeen Public Library's 40th anniversary. Our students, of course, donate to local food pantries and serve the local senior center. And engage in a variety of outreach programs throughout the year.
And that's such an important part of our Catholic faith, and yes. part of the benefits of being in a Catholic school is that, you know, we're teaching our children to serve others, especially those who are vulnerable and in need. You mentioned the school's emphasis on STEM and science. Can you talk to me about some of the other academic programs at St. John?
Sure. Of course, we have our early education program, our K-4 program, which is phenomenal. It does offer a five-day, full-day program, which is different from other schools. Some schools just have a three-day program for their K-4. We offer visual arts. Our art program is fantastic. We are preparing to do our Earth in Art program this year. Religion, language arts, math, science, social studies, foreign language, we offer Spanish. We are welcoming a new physical education teacher who has a strong background in gymnastics. She's a former gymnast herself, so we hope to build that program with her. And of course, our library and media is wonderful. We've redone the library. We also have Lego robotics, which of course integrates into our STEM program, creative writing. So there's a large host of opportunities and programs for our students.
Absolutely. So of course, St. John is a parish school and puts great emphasis on the faith life of its students. Give me some sense for the relationship between the parish and the school.
Sure. We're very involved with our parish. Our students attend weekly mass on Tuesdays. We prepare our students to participate in the sacraments. We seasonally, of course, have the living stations, the living nativity. We teach our students to live the love of Christ in service to others through helping our community and each other. Our students participate in peer ministers. We encourage them to be part of the Eucharistic ministry. Our students and their families attend Sunday service, and we welcome our students who don't regularly attend to attend. So they're incredibly involved.
That's great. And tell me about some of the sports programs that are available to students at St. John.
Absolutely. We have bowling. We have a boys basketball
team. You have a bowling
team. Program. We do have a bowling team.
That's great. I think that's a first.
Yeah, it's different.
Our
students really like that. We have a boys basketball team, which 2 years ago, they won the championship. So we're excited to have them back again. We have street hockey, which is different.
Yeah, definitely different.
The students, again, really like that as well. And we have running club.
Now, where do they do street hockey?
Right in our back.
Really?
We have an alley
That's
behind
great.
Our school
yeah.
That connects our two parking lots.
And are there other schools that participate?
There are a couple.
Yeah.
There are a couple.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never heard of that. One of the things that is a major priority for the school is to obviously prepare its students for high school.
Yes.
Hopefully
yes.
a Catholic high school. Talk to me about how the school approaches that.
We're really excited to say that a lot of our students go on to be the top of their class in their high schools. So
right.
ones and twos in their class in Catholic High School of Baltimore and John Carroll and several other schools. We welcome our students again to participate in peer ministry, as I said. Ambassador Club, which all, of course, are opportunities for leadership. We have a high school testing prep class that we do. We help our students learn how to write creatively and write applications for high school.
Now, one of your jobs is to greet and speak with prospective families.
Mm-hmm.
So if I come in and I ask, I tell you I have a child that may want to go to your school, what do you tell me and to get me to sign on the dotted line?
Sure. Of course, I'm going to mention a lot of what we've
yes.
already talked about today, highlighting our fantastic STEM program and how welcoming and wonderful our school is. And to tell you also that our school is incredibly diverse.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, we have students that are the top of their class, but we also offer assistance through our resource teacher to help those students that may need just a little bit extra help and encouragement.
So you can educate children wherever they are in the learning spectrum.
Absolutely, absolutely. Our resource teacher is phenomenal. So we do accommodate some children who have IEPs.
Sure. If somebody wants to learn more about maybe coming to visit the school or setting up a shadow day, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, we are in the process of redoing our website, but it's still out there. We are welcoming students and prospective students and parents to come on Wednesdays for our walkthrough Wednesdays. Mm-hmm. Meet me there, and I'll be happy to show them around the school and give them some insight. Our open house is November 19th. And, of course, visiting our website at school.stjoanofarc.org.
Lauren Hayden from St. Joan of Arc School in Aberdeen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me again.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. 8 years ago, Bernadette Jackson looked out her front window and noticed some students from Sacred Heart School in Glendon having difficulty crossing the street in heavy morning traffic. A Jehovah's Witness who had no connection to the Catholic school, Jackson called school leaders and asked if she could help. 2 days later, she was interviewed and trained by the local police and was on the job as a crossing guard. "I wanted to help because of the teachings handed down by Jesus," she said, "to be kind and to love people. I'm connected to the school now, heart and soul." Now, 8 years on duty, Jackson has become a treasured part of the Sacred Heart community. On August 24th, she was at the corner of Log House Way and Chatsworth Avenue, holding a welcome back sign and cheering on youngsters on their first day of school. Jackson embroiders pillows for graduating eighth graders. She also knows all the students by name and is always smiling. After the death of her husband, she received support from the Sacred Heart community. Learn more about Jackson and read other education stories in the special back-to-school section that will be featured in September 3rd print issue of the Catholic Review. 10 years ago this week, Hurricane Katrina ravaged New Orleans. Now the city is making a comeback. In an interview with Catholic News Service, now retired New Orleans Archbishop Alfred C. Hughes called it extraordinary when you look back now and see what has emerged and how life has been restored. The Archbishop said he was stunned when he took a helicopter flight over the massive flooding 2 days after the storm and then walked the city's empty streets 2 weeks later. Dozens of public, private, and Catholic schools closed forever, but in the midst of the devastation, the Catholic Church jump-started the city's initial recovery with a bold plan: open up as many Catholic schools as quickly as possible to provide families with a reason to return even when public schools were not ready to open. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is George Matisek.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at catholicreview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online at catholicreview.org. Again, online, that's catholicreview.org.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We continue today with our discussion of the Archbishops of Baltimore, and we're joined by Father Michael Roach. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
My privilege.
So you can't tell the history of the Archdiocese of Baltimore or the Catholic Church in the United States, for that matter, without talking about Cardinal James Gibbons. What made him such an enormous figure and Catholic statesman?
That's a grand question. He was the right man in the right place at the right time. He was from an immigrant family, and yet he rose to great prominence, became the confidant of presidents and the like. I think the Sun papers, of all sources, said that he was the most influential private citizen in the United States at one point.
and he became the youngest bishop in the United States at the time of his consecration as the Vicar Apostolic of North Carolina. This was in 1868, some 9 years before his elevation to the Archbishop of Baltimore. Clearly, there were signs that this man was capable of great things, were there not?
Oh, indeed. Indeed, from his youngest days. From his youngest days after ordination, I always like the story that it's a drive that he would row across the harbor from St. Bridget's to say Mass at St. Lawrence O'Toole, which is now Our Lady of Good Counsel down at Locust Point. So he always had a lot of git, if you will.
And what do we know about his early life? Clearly, he was Baltimore raised.
Indeed, indeed. Though the family went back to Ireland after they lived in Baltimore for a while. He was born in what is now City Hall Plaza, in a row house there. But the family moved back to County Mayo, I believe.
Okay.
And then after a few more years, came back to New Orleans. And interestingly, he entered the seminary from New Orleans to St. Charles in Ellicott City and studied for Baltimore.
And was ordained a priest, and while serving as a priest at St. Bridget's, had been a chaplain, right?
Right, during the Civil War. He did an amazing amount of things and is so well revered and widely revered to the point of being legendary in Baltimore.
Then goes to North Carolina, serving in the Confederate South, fresh off of the bitter defeat of the Civil War, and is said to have traveled on horseback, where he served what was only about 700 Catholics, but over 50,000 square miles. And he wrote about his experiences in a book that was titled The Faith of Our Fathers, being a plain exposition and vindication of the church founded by our Lord Jesus Christ is the official title. That would have been in 1867. So I guess aside from having this rather long title, it ended up selling a million and a half copies. What made it so attractive and as a book?
I have about five different editions of the book, as a matter of fact, that have come into my hands. It was terribly popular. He did it, I think, as a catechetical device in the beginning because Catholics were misunderstood in North Carolina. I can remember as a child that there was a higher percentage of Catholics in the Belgian Congo than there was in North Carolina, even in that day in the 50s. Things have changed a bit. But there's a great story about a doctor writing to him, to the Catholic priest, and he responds and eventually converts the doctor and his whole family. But he was keen on bringing people into the church, and this was a very helpful aid. I mean, it's an absolute classic. There's no question about it.
So he comes to Baltimore, and clearly the issue of his day is the immigration period and post-Civil War, and probably a different Baltimore than he grew up in as a child. Which how did that whole immigration movement kind of shape his approach to ministry and his episcopacy?
Right. When Gibbons was born in Baltimore, it was the third largest city in the country, terribly prosperous because of the port and because of the newly founded railroads. But after the Civil War, things were in bad shape in Baltimore. It was a different world. Many of the people in Baltimore had invested heavily in the Confederacy. The B&O was fairly wrecked by the Civil War, so it was a different city. And as you mentioned, the waves of immigrants who came in. Interestingly, it can be said, I think objectively, that Gibbons was an Americanist. He was very strong on assimilation. You dropped the ethnic roots and you became very much an American. So he had some great battles with the Germans especially on that question.
Over leaving, not really leaving behind, but you could argue leaving behind your ethnicity a little bit.
Indeed, indeed.
He was a champion of the poor, championed the rights of labor. It seems Pope Francis would have liked Cardinal Gibbons a good bit.
Right, because he also had a good press presence, as a matter of fact, like the Holy Father. He was a great friend of the laboring man. He read the signs of the times very well on that. And originally the church had an anti-union position, and he changed that. He definitely changed that and became very much identified with the cause of labor in the United States, very much the friend of the worker.
And he, during his time, oversaw what was to be the largest council held outside of the Vatican since the Council of Trent, and this was the Third Plenary Council. How important was this particular gathering?
Terribly important, terribly important. Among the things that they brought to the fore was, of course, the Catholic University, the Baltimore Catechism, which the whole world seems to know, And the Baltimore Ritual, which was the English-speaking ritual used throughout much of the world until the Council, it still survives in some places.
Yeah. So and you mentioned he was you described him as an Americanist, which I think is very accurate. This, if it wasn't clear before the speech he gives at St. Mary's in Trastevere upon receiving the red hat when he was elevated to the College of Cardinals, it became clear then.
Absolutely, absolutely. Americanism was something of a Catholic manifest destiny that the Catholic Church in the United States was in the best possible shape and condition that any church in the world could have to exist in the system of democracy that we have here. And he became great friends with many of the presidents, as a matter of fact, Teddy Roosevelt especially, but also William Howard Taft.
Mm-hmm. And there are pictures of him. I think Roosevelt refers to him as the most useful citizen in the country.
Yes, they come to his
funeral and to his Jubilee celebrations.
I could still remember people when I was younger who had been very proud to say they had been to Cardinal Gibbons' funeral in Holy Week of 1921, and, matter of fact, had knelt in Mulberry Street, a block or so away from the old cathedral, just to be part of it. It was, I think, the world shut down that day.
Yeah, I mean, we're jumping ahead for sure, but some 200,000 people were said to have attended his wake.
I can believe it.
Which is astonishing when you think about events today and just the way that the church is viewed and its place in society.
You could never say anything critical about Cardinal Gibbons in Baltimore. There were things to be critical about, but you didn't say them because they take you on if you said anything even mildly questioning of Cardinal Gibbons.
So his views of the relationship of church and state were controversial, I think, in looking in retrospect, both here but also in Europe and especially in Rome.
Right. There was a suspicion about Americanism in Rome, and there were two documents issued from Rome. One said, we're not sure if there is this phenomenon called Americanism, but if there is, get rid of it. And then the second one, Testem Benevolentiae in 1899, was an even stronger condemnation of Americanism, I think in part because of a misinterpretation of what Americanism was.
And Gibbons seemed to have took that pretty hard. In looking at the documents, it seems like he went through a kind of a melancholy period where he felt like, you know, maybe he, I don't know if he was starting to question his thinking or if he was just upset that he felt a little bit alone in terms of the church's perception.
Well, of course, you know, the classic story about him is when they ask him about papal infallibility, he said, well, I believe in it, but I got to tell you, the Pope always calls me Gibbons.
So in 1911, the church marks Gibbons' golden jubilee as a priest and his silver jubilee as a cardinal, and some 20,000 people are said to have come to Baltimore's 5th Regiment Armory to mark the occasion, including Presidents Taft and Theodore Roosevelt. I guess that is a pretty good indicator of the esteem in which the cardinal was held.
All of Washington shut down that day, and they all came to the old cathedral in Baltimore.
Cardinal Gibbons will be remembered for many things. What do you think stands out the most?
I suppose, with very broad strokes, he brought the Catholic hierarchy into a standing they hadn't had probably since John Carroll's time with the American public at large. Everybody knew Cardinal Gibbons. Everyone revered him. And he had the common touch. He went for a walk every day, as you know, up Charles Street to North Avenue or so, and would just meet people on the road and talk with them. Some great stories from that time.
A priest and a bishop of the people.
Indeed, he was.
Yeah.
And if he wasn't, he certainly gave the impression that he was.
Which, at the end of the day, I guess is the most important thing.
Right.
So that's Father Michael Roach speaking on the longest-serving Archbishop of Baltimore, Cardinal James Gibbons. This is Catholic Baltimore.
You are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics, even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point, or you can only see him on a video screen. You will want to join what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year. For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150. 443-524-3150. See you in Philly.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.